Good morning, Serena Locke.
Hello, Edwina.
The budget, most exciting, billions of dollars allocated to natural disaster response in this week's budget. It's essentially an election pitch, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, and we did see an intense summer of floods, fires and cyclones. So what the Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, has done is announce a $3.9 billion emergency response fund to ensure additional resourcing is available to support future national natural disaster recovery efforts. And he proposes to withdraw up to $150 million each year following a significant disaster, and it'll be managed by the Future Fund and pulled out whenever the emergency funds are exhausted. And that's in addition to a new Future Drought Fund worth up to $5 billion, which we remember the government announced late last year.
And it's a really interesting concept because just a few years ago, both the Productivity Commission and the National Audit Office were really very critical of how we respond to natural disasters and the whole idea that bailout money is the focus, and in fact recommended that it should be spent on mitigation rather than, oh my God, something's gone wrong. So it'll be fascinating to see exactly how that's going to be administered and how you kind of trigger extra cash. What about the farm household allowance, that big ticket item of drought response?
Well, that's the one that helps farming families just cope with the day-to-day expenses. There's only a small $3 million increase in that farm household allowance, and it's at the moment it's only going to 6,000 households, so there are up to 90,000 farming families, and there's a means test on it at the moment. So what this will do is allow for farmers who are facing drought to sell their cattle and sheep but not show that against their income, because that's been restricting their access to the farm household allowance.
Which is most interesting and, again, kind of tricky, isn't it? Because who knows how much they'll actually make from those cattle and sheep once they're at the point of having to sell them. But really, most interestingly, there was no overhaul of the drought policy in the budget, and that's certainly what a lot of rural lobby groups were looking for.
And that may become part of the election policy that both will now enter into. The National Farmers Federation is really disappointed there's no drought policy. There hasn't been one for years. But the president of the NFF, Fiona Simpson, praises elements of the budget where there's a $30 million for trialling payments for landholders to look after the environment. It's a biodiversity payments, a stewardship, and it'll establish a credit system that could be traded like the carbon trading scheme.
It's got strong bipartisan support and coupled with, you know, $2 billion towards the Climate Solutions Fund, which will help develop some of the methodologies that we need to start measuring some of the things that we do on farms, some of the positive environmental outcomes that we attain. Those sorts of things can move to very positive change, not just in how we do things, but in how we are perceived to do things. And, you know, I think that that is really an absolute game changer and could be. It's just a pilot study at this stage, very early days. But to be able to get that into a budget and have bipartisan support for it means that whatever happens in the election, you know, we look forward to seeing those initiatives in place.
And the NFF has welcomed the government's commitment to regional infrastructure projects, saying that that'll help get produce to markets via road and rail, and also on improving the mobile phone coverage. So black spot funding has been listed again for funding.
There were also some quirky, if you like, announcements, including one which made the main winners and losers story out of the budget, and one of the losers was fire ants.
Yeah, so fire ants are the losers and those trying to control them the winners. There's a commitment in this budget to apply a levy on shipping containers and other cargo, and that'll raise $300 million to assist biosecurity. But to the fire ants, there's an extra $18.3 million to help the effort to eradicate those nasty biting ants, and another $9 million for the yellow crazy ant in the Queensland tropics. Now, Andrew Cox from the Invasive Species Council has really welcomed that news.
If they don't eradicate red imported fire ants from southeast Queensland, south of Brisbane, we will have fire ants across the whole country. There's no doubt about it. And the massive, you know, billions of dollars worth of cost and the health and agricultural impacts and the environmental impacts. So what the budget's done, it's brought forward some money from the federal government, $18 million extra to this program. Now, it's already a big program, $411 million over 10 years. But by bringing forward the money, it means they can get on top of it earlier.
Now, there's not a massive focus in this budget on the resources sector, but they have been fairly pleased about quite a big spending commitment to roads, rail and air transport.
Yeah, so that's the promise to spend $100 billion on regional infrastructure. But there's a catch, it's to be spent over a decade, and that's of course if the Coalition wins the election. So in Queensland, for example, the budget will include $2.6 billion for new road and rail, like the Bruce Highway upgrades up the East Coast, the Gateway Motorway extension and the Cairns Ring Road. But Queensland State Labor Treasurer Jackie Trad says the majority of that funding won't be seen until 2023-24 financial year.
There's also spending for improving training.
Yeah, so the Minerals Exploration Council has welcomed that. The budget includes a $525 million for a skills package, which in part's designed to help create 80,000 new apprenticeships in sectors with skill shortages. And Warren Pearce from the Mining Lobby Group says that in addition to that, mining will also benefit from the skills and trades investment.
Our industry being heavily dependent on technology and innovation to be successful in mineral exploration really needs that skill set coming through into our industry. So there's a positive measures looking forward that our industry will certainly benefit from.
Away from the budget, Sri Lankan dairy farmers say they've been financially ruined after hundreds of cows imported from Australia and New Zealand died or contracted diseases.
Yeah, so that's right. The ABC's investigations unit has reported on a program that was designed to boost Sri Lanka's local milk production, but it's resulted in several hundred dead cattle. And the scheme was backed by the Australian government, still is, and involves Wellard Livestock Exporter sourcing many dairy cows from Victoria and some from New South Wales and South Australia, also some from New Zealand. Now, it's supposed to take 20,000 dairy cows. So far, 5,000 have been exported, but Sri Lankan farmers have told the ABC about 10% have died. And let's hear from a dairy farm manager in central Sri Lanka, Malik Gunasekaran. He's had to bury his dead cattle and has some skinny cattle left over.
From the beginning, from the time these animals were brought here, from the very first week, these animals started dying. We started with 200 animals in total. Now at the moment, our head count is 58.
So some dairy farmers have lost a lot of money. They've paid up to $1,600 for a pregnant dairy heifer. And they were told the cows could produce 20 litres of milk a day once they'd calved, of course. But they're reportedly producing only half of that. Now, in its defence, the Australian export company Wellard says vets checked the cattle in Australia and in Sri Lanka and that these dairy Friesian cross Jersey cows were suited to the tropics. And Wellard's executive chairman, John Klepek, says the program has been a success overall, except for a few farms that weren't feeding the cattle properly.
We had this small recalcitrant group of farmers that refused to follow the advice, and the specific mortality rate that you're referring to on that particular farm accounts for the large amount of abnormal deaths that occurred on the second shipment.
So Wellard says the project's going to continue, but they'll select the farms in Sri Lanka quite carefully. But even the Sri Lankan Attorney General has got involved and he's written a pretty damning report. He's described the project as an unbearable burden to the government, and the farmers were misled and suffered financial and mental distress. So you can see that story on our ABC website.
Now, in a world first, a robot is being used to pick a commercial apple crop at an orchard in New Zealand.
Well, I think we all fear that robots are going to take our jobs, and maybe it's starting already in New Zealand. So T&G Global operates the Hawke's Bay Orchard and has been developing a robot picker for the past 4 years with an American technology partner, Abundant Robotics. And Gary Wellwood from T&G says the robot's doing a good job picking the fruit, has a vacuum suction, and it can harvest 40 bins of apples a day and would work alongside the quick apple picking humans.
It's got computer vision that scans the canopy, identifies fruit that is suitable for harvest, both position and maturity. And then it has a vacuum interfector that it places over the apple and sucks it off the tree.
Sounds very efficient. Now, I am very perplexed about this proposition in the next story. Would you use soap made of fish?
Well, I think great-grandma used to make soap out of boiled-down rendered fat, so maybe it's Yum-o. Not such an odd thing. Turns out fish soap's good for your skin and your tools if you're going fishing, guards against rust. And at the Gulf of Carpentaria, far north Queensland, it's pretty tough to get businesses going and tourism sort of declining. So one shopkeeper at Corumba has decided to develop barramundi fish soap, and the tourists are loving it. And Leah Wilding says it doesn't smell like fish once she's done.
I spend about 3 days doing it because I like making sure it's filtered properly and, you know, everything's done well. And it doesn't have that fishy smell once it's in the soap. You just blend the oils together, add it with the lye mixture, add your fragrance or essential oils and pour it into moulds.
Delightful. Well, I'll let you test that, Serena, and you can pass on the results to us, perhaps.
Thanks, Edwina.
Serena Locke there with this week's Rural News Wrap. You can read more about all of those stories, including fishy soap, at our website, abc.net.au/radionational.